Hi, everyone. Are you all back?
Yes.
Great.
So we decided that we were going to go ahead and record this. And so, as we often do, we didn't actually have a chance before to ask whether there were any announcements that people wanted to make for today's call. So are there any announcements? Cameras are normally our source of all kinds of things that are going on. So,
This
is Martha. I don't have an announcement to make, but I was kind of curious about where we went with the communications subcommittee of CLN.
We've been trying to just basically put a panel together. And I think there were a couple of folks who hadn't responded, and Tamara was following up with that. So it's kind of in her court, and about half of it is kind of ready. So we definitely want to do that probably in the next month or so.
Those of us who weren't on whatever that call was?
We actually didn't have a call. As far as I know, it's all been done by email. So I'll talk to Tamara later in the week and make sure that we get that thing scheduled. And I know we're all keen to talk about that, and I certainly know you are. So,
who just said that?
Yeah, that's Scott here, Scott Carley.
And Roberta is the one that's clueless. I thought I was reading all my emails, but this doesn't ring a bell. What are you talking about? It kind of started last August. There have been different times when there have been some starts, but end of last August, I made a presentation about communicating. Yes. And then after that, there was a lot of interest. And then I'm a little clueless too, Roberta, so something.
It's on our list, and there's been some work done, but we haven't quite been able to schedule a panel to talk about. And the idea is to look at the role of social media and communication. And so it's not only sort of the technology, but I think, and I'm sure this is where Martha would like to go, it's the nature of the messaging that we're doing, and that kind of relates to what we've been talking about too, is and especially the Rainey paper that some of us looked at this week through the listserv. It's sort of the message has to be really clear, and that's really true when you're doing social media, when you've got certain restrictions on how long the message is. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure it was restricted to social media. I think we were going to start, my recommendation was that we started with a creative brief and a strategy and the messaging, and then, it goes out 360 degrees, but it starts in the kernel of the most important thing is this, the message and the audience, and then expanding out from there. And then social media, I believe, is just one cog in the wheel.
Yeah, I think that was the part that at least sort of caught on in terms of wanting to do a presentation after yours, because you certainly talked about that last fall.
Well, speaking of the social media and all of that, has anybody tried the Reality Drop yet?
What's that?
That came out a couple weeks, well, maybe it's been 3 weeks ago. The new website that I think was started by Al Gore's group where do y'all know what I'm talking about? Is anybody in the dark about that? Because I can do a recap. I did join it, and I've been a little frustrated by it.
Okay,
Because
tell us a little bit more about it, and then certainly your frustration. That would be very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna just make sure that I have the right web address. Yeah. It's called realitydrop.org, and the gist of it is this is it's an opportunity to get the message out. To counter denialist claims in some cases, as they say on this website, or to just spread bits of, the actual science, the reality of what's going on. And they do it in a way that sort of makes it a little bit competitive, and they give you points for doing reality drops. So the way it works is they have on their page, which isn't loading for me right now because my
internet is all messed up today, but on their homepage they'll have, once you create a login, they'll have a whole series of topics that you can, and there are topics that have the latest article on somebody's website about, and then you can click on your whatever calls to you, and in some cases it might be an article that spreads, you know, not science, you know, unreality about climate change, and in some cases it might be something that, that is, you know, a latest scientific study. You click on that and it'll say drop reality or something like that, and then you're immediately directed to that website, and you can cut and paste a brief little counterargument or statement about climate change that's supposed to speak to whatever that article's topic is. So it's a way, you know, how the comment sections often fill up with all kinds of awful stuff. That, you know, a couple of really vocal people will go in there and blast the comment sections with a lot of nasty stuff that doesn't really have much science in it. So this is a way to counter that and to what they call spread reality. But what I have found is when I've gone into some of those places, I get directed to a website. It might be the Topeka, Kansas Times, or it might be, you know, a big article like from the Wall Street Journal or something like that. A lot of them you have to register in order to post, of course. So that takes time and effort, and then, of course, I never remember my password to go back to it. I don't really want everybody having my Facebook information. So that's obstacle number one. And then obstacle number two, it seems like a lot of times the topics that they have you cut and paste into the comment section aren't always exactly about what they should be. It's like... I don't think they have enough people really working on the site yet to make sure that what you're cutting and pasting really applies to that particular article. So I think they have some bugs to work out.
Well, this could be very counterproductive, too.
Well, it could.
In some ways, is all of a sudden you're starting to put, you know, irrelevant kinds of comments and people just start pushing back on that.
Yeah, although presumably the people who are going to be doing participating in this, hopefully they're going to be like me and they're going to immediately see that this doesn't make any sense to this article. I'm
right.
not doing this. And in those,
or rewrite it.
You know, I took the time to rewrite it, and wrote something else, which is great.
Yeah.
But by the time I got to that point, I thought, oh, man, okay, this is 15 minutes for one post? Forget this. I'm not messing with it. So, I don't know. It's an interesting concept. It sounded fun, but I haven't really been able to stick with it.
It makes me curious how different people are going to operate with it.
Yeah.
And do people really want to get points? Are they going to try to post a whole bunch of the generalized comments just so they get more points? That's what I would ask.
I mean, that was the other thing is I went
to
places and saw the exact same cut and paste that somebody else from Reality Drop had done before me. And I thought, oh, this isn't going to look good if they have exactly the same comment again and again and again, cookie cutter, because that's going to take away from the... you know, the validity in my book anyway. So.
Yeah,
there's something wrong about the incentive.
Right.
Yeah,
like the absence of critical thinking by whoever sending it in.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't have too much problem with sort of identifying articles out there that are, you know, what's the phrase they use is, you know, destroy denial or spread truth. Well, I might language it a little differently, but I have no problem identifying those things, but actually prompting people what to put in and adding points just seems to be not very useful.
Yeah. Oh, I will say that they do give you extra points for essentially critically thinking. You get a couple points for the post, but you get more points for being able to answer questions or identify things about the article. So, but
yeah,
you know, most, you know, like I said, it still seems like an awful lot of work.
Yes.
Better to just be posting on the articles that we're already reading, all of us, and take the time.
Or write an article of your own.
Yeah, exactly. Or a letter to the editor or whatever.
Exactly.
But I think there's another piece to this, which is that the strategy, I mean, we've all read these comments before, and we see the cut and pastes of non-sound scientifically statements.
Yes.
And I think using that same exact strategy to counter that strategy is not going to work at all.
Right.
In fact, it's going to backfire pretty badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think just structurally, if they're giving anybody points for putting something worded exactly the same way as the recommended thing is a bad idea.
Right.
Yeah.
But suggesting something to start from is one thing. But,
yeah.
Exactly.
The general, if they actually target some false comments that were made or misleading mm-hmm. comments, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then if there's general information that can be built on, but it's like must be tweaked in order to get points. But I don't know. There's that whole external, internal motivation thing, and I think I'm a bad person to talk to about that. I tend not to like all of that point stuff, but I can tell you NSTA is doing that right now with science teachers. They have a learning center at NSTA, and you get points for researching articles, for participating in forums, for this, that, and the other. And I think the theory is recognition.
Mm-hmm.
That it's very Skinnerian from my point of view. And that's what I think hurts my feelings, that if we're really salivating like Pavlov's dogs and all that,
exactly.
It makes me feel bad about who we are as humans.
But, you know, there's another project. I know about the NSTA one, but the LinkedIn uses a percentage of your LinkedIn page that is complete, like all the features you can add. And it just gives you, it's not you're competing with anybody else, but it does give you a way of saying how complete you are. Mm-hmm. There are other things you could do here to be more complete. And you know,
complete
that
are you, Frank?
Yeah, how complete are you?
I'm right up there at the top, baby. I've got all my papers in there, projects in there, you know.
Oh, geez, if we could all
be so complete. Make sure to connect with Frank on LinkedIn now.
I'm
an active LinkedIn
level.
I'm going to get on there and give you a thumbs up.
There you go.
I'm going to endorse you.
But there is some social science research that shows that this type of badging thing does kind of engage people. But I wouldn't go as far as to say as Pavlovian, but. Because that stuff generally doesn't work, but there is something to this socialization of sharing information.
Mm-hmm. So are there any other announcements?
That was great. I'm really, really glad we explored that.
No, it is. It was very good.
So the one I would add, guys, is the Next Generation Science Standards are pending to be coming out very soon.
I heard the 31st.
Oh, is that what you heard?
I heard the 31st, so that's the end of the week, I guess.
Terrific.
That would be Saturday.
This is Mark.
Yeah, so,
can you hear me?
Mark?
Yeah, so, no, it's been delayed. The release of NGSS will be early April, maybe mid-April, maybe late.
Okay.
So it's not the end.
Are they talking after the, that would be after the NSTA meeting.
Yeah, I think they're just scrambling as fast as they can. And
yeah, so. It seemed pretty
But it's definitely not
tough schedule.
Okay. I mean, but the timing is important because those, I mean, we've talked about the NSTA meeting and you know, myself and Ted Willard are going to try and engage, you know, members of the community down there to talk about some of the other other projects we've been talking about. But I think that the, you know, when it does come out, maybe if we share our findings of, like, the strengths and kind of, like, our last look at it based on the previous looks we've done in May and then again in January, just to kind of see what happens. And that would probably be a good thing for the network.
So do something, you know, in April or in May where we just sort of, okay, where are we? And what do we as a network feel about sort of next steps for ourselves, the work that we're doing?
But also kind of like, you know, just a once it's out, how do we as a network feel about the strengths of, you know, we saw a lot of promise and potential. And, you know, what came out the final, it would be probably good for us to have a common understanding or a shared understanding.
Well, in some ways, we need our own elevator speech. If somebody asks us, well, how did the Next Generation Science Standards look when it finally came out?
That would be very useful.
Yeah, I think so, too. Because I know, I mean, I certainly get asked a lot about it, or at least, or I inject it into conversations, let's put it that way, to be really truthful.
Yep.
People sort of get down on education. It says, well, you know, we have the NGSS coming, and we're all hoping that that's going to be helpful, and maybe not. Who knows?
The only other announcement I have is NOAA has been undergoing a long redesign of the climate portal, climate.gov, and we have partnership with Clean, and we will be syndicating 100% of the Clean collection through the climate portal in the teaching section, and that should be live. We are hoping for by NSTA, but it might be right after that, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
But there's a lot of new functionality there, but it's raising the profile of the Clean collection.
Great.
Quite a bit.
So, Frank, we're hoping that you'll do a kind of a walkthrough for us to show everyone on the network what's on the new site and, you know, all the things that we might miss if we look at it on the surface.
I'd love to.
Yeah, and
I'd
I hope
to.
We can do that as soon as possible. I think it makes sense to wait until that's launched. And then
we can do it live. Yeah, let's do it when it's live. It'll be coming out, you know, so either the Tuesday, I would say the Tuesday after the, I guess that would be the 16th. Either the 16th or the one after that would probably be the best to if we can schedule that out. I'd love to do that for you guys.
Yeah, I can tell you we have a presentation on environment or energy literacy on the 16th, and on the 23rd, Jeannie Scott from Mark's shop is going to talk about academic freedom. But that's just the next two presentations that we have scheduled for April. So we'll maybe hit on what it would be, the 30th or so.
I can absolutely do it by then.
Yeah. But we'll get it.
It'll be done by the 30th. If it isn't, I'm going to be a very unhappy person.
Yes.
So let's schedule that.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good.
And I'll send out a note announcement to the network so you guys can go check it out.
Yeah, so we can pass it on.
Excellent. Yeah.
That's a big, big piece. So any other announcements, comments, concerns, whatever?
This is Roberta here. I'm getting ready for an event we're going to have on Earth Day in at our Department for Environmental Protection. We recently got the very first hybrid plug-in electric vehicles in the Kentucky state fleet.
Mm-hmm.
They're Volts, and we have charging stations, and so we're going to do a big ribbon cutting with the First Lady, the Governor's wife, and all of that on Earth Day, and I'm getting all of those talking points together, and it's something that's kind of been consuming me lately, you know, sort of from the greenhouse gas perspective, it's not as huge of a leap as it is, you know, as huge of a decrease as it is from an air quality perspective, because we're such a coal state. But
But still, it's pretty amazing just in the month that we've had these two vehicles, they're averaging around, for the shorter trips, about 100 mm-hmm. miles to the gallon because we're running so much off of the charge. And I think, you know, there's a lot of mixed messages out there about electric vehicles and hybrid electric plug-ins and things like that because of the fact that they still have to get their power from fossil fuels somewhere a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to look at this in a positive way, especially from the perspective of as more and more of our power shifts to renewables, a lot of these vehicles are going to have access to that kind of a power grid, and I think it's a good thing ultimately. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited to have them. It's amazing. You can just go online and type in a password, and it immediately hooks into all of the information about your vehicle. Tells you exactly mm-hmm. how you drove it, and you know, all of the efficiency information and everything. It's a pretty high-tech vehicle. I'm pretty impressed.
Great. Well, we just mentioned Earth Day, and I mentioned that one of the things that's going to happen in Seattle is the opening of the Bullitt Center, which is the a highly sustainable building. It's way beyond LEED in terms of its functionality. It has a huge solar roof on it, which actually extends over the footprint of the building, and it collects all of its own rainwater, which actually, interesting, in the city of Seattle was a problem because there are basically laws that say you can't collect rainwater, you can't impede the movement of rainwater into the system. So there was some legislation that had to change. So this is a building with sustainably grown wood products, and there will be certainly the foundation, the Bullitt Foundation, which is a regional environmental group, will be there, and then a lot of other kinds of groups that are very interested in sustainable building, in particular the International Living Building Challenge, which is actually the group that is setting the criteria for buildings of that sort of, almost post LEED status. So it'll be kind of interesting. It literally is in walking distance from my home. So it literally is in the neighborhood, and it is, I think they're certainly claiming it is the most environmentally sensitive office building built in the world. So it's going to get a lot of attention. And I'm not sure whether people are really interested in those kinds of things. We're certainly going to see in various jurisdictions, just as we're seeing these changes in transportation, we'll see these changes in buildings. And we know buildings are enormous draw on, fossil fuels and the production of CO2. I don't know whether there's some interest in maybe having someone come in and talk about some of the features of the Bullitt Center and some of the issues that they had to deal with. We can certainly consider doing that. It's kind of an area that we haven't explored here because we've been interested in sort of the education stuff. But, this talk, we initiated this whole conversation today around the informal science centers. And in many ways, just as Roberta's talking about, the two vehicles in their fleet, the Bullitt Center here in Seattle will also be, is essentially, by it being there, it becomes, informal science center, and certainly that's the intention. It's a teaching tool also, just by being so visibly available in the city.
So, Roberta, was that you who mentioned the Volt?
Yes.
Yeah.
So one thing that came up in a meeting just the other day was, and this is kind of relates to that ask that the Ocean Project had, which is, and I don't know, EPA website's not working right now, but the renewable energy credit market should allow your institution to buy 100% wind or solar for a competitive, if not cheaper, price. And so this just matters which electricity goes into the vault. And that it doesn't matter where the energy is produced. So it doesn't have to be wind in Kentucky. It could be wind that's produced in Texas.
Right.
That's how the renewable energy credit market works.
Right.
And so, you know, there are lots of independent third, you can use the EPA website.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Green Power Partnership is the where a lot of that is. And you can look up, you know, who is selling renewable energy credits in Kentucky that you could sign up with and get all of your organization or personal electricity provided from.
Okay.
That would work.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's what the Ocean Project, I mean, for me in my house, I have 100% wind cheaper than coal and nuclear. Mm-hmm. For you know, all my electricity comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be hard to beat the price that Kentuckians are paying for electricity here. It's so cheap.
Well, it's very, I would look into it.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. You know, and if you're, you know, I don't know what the price difference is, but sometimes you can find, you know, a way of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I'm
really trying to spin it is more from an air quality standpoint, since we don't have the tailpipe emissions and the cars are traveling so much in the city. That's where we really deal a lot with the impact from tailpipe emissions and ozone mm-hmm. formation. So at least from that perspective, it's not as impactful as a traditional vehicle.
Right. So I just found out that there's a whole bunch of Kentucky institutions that will give you different options in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy like 100% new wind and things like that, lots of different options. But I don't know what the price point is, the difference between the two. So yeah, but that may be a way to kind of walk that walk.
Okay.
But I will tell you a lot of people. Just the last point, Scott. A lot of people don't understand how renewable energy credits work. They think that when you buy wind, when it stops being windy, you run out of electricity. It's a very common question that I get asked when I talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some education still needed there.
It's almost like that has become a joke. You know,
but it's a common misconception. They think mm-hmm. that there's, it's, you know, wind turbine moving, your house has electricity. Wind turbine not moving, your house has no electricity.
Right.
It's really that concrete.
Yeah, we're way beyond that.
Yeah, I think people look at solar that way too.
I was just going to say to Roberta, the idea of adding renewable energy onto that it sort of increases the story that you're telling about your electric fleet.
Yeah,
it's another piece of this, and it's just another opportunity to talk about some of these options with the folks in Kentucky and elsewhere.
Yep, I will definitely talk to another division in Kentucky state government that deals with renewable energy. So I will ask my friend who works over there about where we're at with that.
Good. So are there any other announcements or comments, questions, whatever?
Well, I was wondering, this is Martha, if anybody got the call for papers that I sent out from Oceans 13, I send it to the listserv.
Okay.
It was for Oceans 13.
Yes,
and
saw
there
that.
There is an ocean energy section under other, and did people receive that?
Yeah, yeah. I saw it.
Okay, we'll take a look. It's due May 3rd.
Coming up.
I think it's going to be a good opportunity to talk about these issues in San Diego. It's going to be a pretty incredible event.
Is anyone presenting at NAAAE?
Oh, that's right. That's due in 2 days. I should be saying that.
That's
due.
That's right. That is one of our announcements. It's the end of the month.
That's due in 2 days, and I'm in charge of the
I noticed that.
Issues
you got one
strand,
of
so submit to that one. Especially that one.
This is also an opportunity to remind folks that the National Climate Assessment public comments, I think it's the, Mark, correct me, is it the 12th? I think it's the 12th the public comments are due.
That's right.
Yeah. And yeah, we haven't had yet a chance to talk about that. We're actually trying to arrange for a discussion with Kathy Jacobs, who is the, I think she's actually the person that who's chairing all of that. And she's said, yeah, I'll do it. And but we haven't been able to pick a date, and we're starting to run out of time because it would be nice to do that before the 12th. So either you know, next week or the following week. But Kathy said she was willing to present here and talk about the whole program of the National Climate Assessment. And I know Mark is particularly interested in the lack of the education in the assessment. So
yeah, maybe I could just sum up briefly where
sure,
things stand.
Sure, please do.
We a number of us had a call last week to talk about how to respond to the draft National Climate Assessment, which, as Scott mentioned, the window for entering public comments into the website is the 12th of April, so
April.
Coming right up. And if anybody's interested, I can point you to a Google Doc page that I set up that has excerpts from the draft assessment and a few comments on the lack of education. A couple of things that are germane to this are the fact that the U.S., as a signatory of the United Nations Framework on Climate Change Convention, is required to put together education and training opportunities around climate change. And as Frank mentioned on the call last week, the U.S. is actually better than most countries in that regard. But, you know, there's still, in this new draft assessment, some huge gaps in terms of the role of education and the importance of informing people, kind of the right of people to know, especially young people, about the hazards and responses to climate change. So if anybody's interested, I could point you to the page that I've put together. And then please, if you have time, submit your own comments. We're not going to have time for us collectively to go through and comment, but I think in some ways it's even better to have lots of little comments about the same point, which is that there's a lot more that could be done. There's some good research that we can point people to about the effectiveness and vital importance of education and literacy to being able to make informed decisions and so forth.
Do you know where that money is? Do you know where the money is being appropriated now for that?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, you know, the draft assessment that, as the U.S. as a signatory of the U.S. Climate Change Convention, there were educational mandates, and I was just asking if you knew who had access to those funds yet.
I have no idea. You're talking about international funds?
I'm not really sure how to access those funds. I just wondered if you did.
No, I mean, it's up to each country to come up with their own program, from my understanding. Obviously, the countries that are struggling theoretically would get money from developed countries. The U.S. really has to take care of itself. And as we've seen, the funding from the federal agencies for climate education is being cut way back. And, you know, that's a huge concern. But also the fact that climate isn't well represented in the – I'm sorry, climate education isn't well represented in the National Climate Assessment is troubling, you know, particularly since communication and education are key components of the U.S. Global Change Research Program's strategic plan. They do talk a fair amount about communication and working with decision makers, et cetera, in the draft assessment. It's really kind of imbalanced in the sense that education is almost not mentioned at all, and where it is mentioned, it's sort of very much in passing, And I think the simple reason is that they didn't have any strong education advocates involved with the draft assessment.
Mm.
You know, the people that they did have around communication and engagement are from that area, you know, from that arena of communication research. But there was nobody really leading the charge on education. So that's certainly going to be one of my comments to the, you know, when I input my comments in the next week or so, I'll be mentioning that they need to have at least one, if not multiple, people that have that kind of expertise involved. And that ultimately, when the final report comes out, it's a huge sort of teachable moment. And the website that the U.S. Global Change Research Program is putting together, you know, to sort of back up the National Climate Assessment, should have the educational opportunities sort of thought through and built in. But so far, they just haven't been thinking about that.
Mark, you know, this is a huge document. I'm looking at just the chapters. Where did you find anything on education? I mean, was it under the policy, the decision support, policy planning and resources?
I scanned the whole document at some length. I didn't read every single page by any means, but I did some keyword searches, and chapter 29 is the one place that education is explicitly talked about.
Research agenda for climate change science.
Right, and it was more in the sense that, oh yeah, we need to do more education research. It's kind of important, but that's really about it.
Wow.
So the
wow.
The authors of that chapter, Bob Correll and Diana Liverman, I think they understand the value of education, but. Mm-hmm. In the rest of the documents, you know, even the one Ed Maybach and Susie Mosier helped spearhead on communication and engagement, there's no mention of education. And there's no mention of climate literacy, even though that's one of the key documents of the climate of the U.S. Global Change Research Program on their website for education. So...
Well, I wonder if Mark, if you'd be willing to remind the people on the list, put a link to the public comment place, because I think, I know for me, I remembered that was on my to-do list, and then I kind of lost the list and then thought it was too late. So it's good to know that we still have time to do something about this.
Yeah.
Mark, I want you to know, this is Jane, and I had printed that off when it first came out, but I, too, end up being pressured by those deadlines of other things that were due.
Mm-hmm.
So we do still have time to comment on this, and this is a good reminder to do that.
And
I think one of the key things we can include is basically any kind of evidence, and it doesn't have to be something from a peer-reviewed journal. It can be even a newspaper article talking about education and the importance of it. And it can be all the way up to April 12th, so it doesn't have to be something that was last year or the year before.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very current, and include that in your comments if you can consider it to be compelling evidence of the importance and value of education and helping build a sort of climate literate society as a key strategy to dealing with climate change. So, I'll go ahead and send out a reminder and a link to that Google Doc page I put together and a link to where people can make their comments.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you very much,
Mark. Great.
Well, thank you. So you're going to send a link to everybody?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Oh, Scott, I've got one more reminder.
Oh, please.
Is there any way to chapter 29?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Is there any way to link it to chapter 29, access to it online? The chapter 29, is that what you were saying?
Oh.
Would there be a way to
directly to that.
I mean,
there's
I
you can go to individual chapters if you go to their main portal.
Yeah, and again, the Google Doc page that I put together, basically I cut and paste excerpts from the document into the Google Docs. Anything that's explicitly education-related or even communication and outreach-oriented.
That's great.
The one reminder that I would give people, since Tamara isn't here, but she's done a good job of trying to remind us, is if anyone hasn't filled out the SurveyMonkey for how they use the Climate Literacy Network, this is a good opportunity, and it's not very painful, so so go do it, everybody who hasn't.
Thank you, Jane, for that.
There you go, Scott. That was for you,
too.
I
appreciate it. Thank you.
No, I filled it out. I'm done.
But, yes, please, if you folks could do that, that'd be very helpful for our planning going forward. Anyway, pretty close to the top of the hour. Are we pretty much done?
Yep.
Just with an excellent discussion.
Yes. Always appreciate. I think it's a really good idea for us to have, you know, every couple of weeks an opportunity just to talk about stuff and not just sort of focus on a particular presentation and theme. So it's great to have this opportunity to do this. So thanks to everyone for contributing so beautifully. And we'll talk next week. And we don't quite know what the theme will be, whether it will be another informal discussion or whether we'll be able to bring Kathy Jacobs in and talk a bit more at length around the National Climate Assessment. But stay tuned. I will put any updates up on the webpage, and, of course, there will be an announcement about a day before what our topic will be for next week.
Thanks.
So very good. Thanks.
Do you think it would be good to add a topic that was something about brainstorming the just a communication strategy for CLN?
We could certainly make that a theme for our informal discussion. There's no question. I'm always looking for things. And we kind of like keeping things free form as much as we can, because you just never quite know what's going to happen over the next week, and we actually all want to talk about it. So let's we'll look at all those possibilities. So good.
Thanks, everybody. Thank
you.
Yes,
thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. Great. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Talk next week.